is made possible in part by the generous support of Devereaux, the nation's largest nonprofit provider of behavioral health care for children, adolescents, and adults with developmental and intellectual disabilities, behavioral disorders, and mental illness. Devereaux operates at 15 centers in 11 states throughout the country.
I'm Dan Gottlieb. Thanks for listening to Voices in the Family. Well, today's show is about anxiety, and I am an expert in the area. Not so much professionally, although I know a little bit, but I'm an expert because as young as 9 years old, when I was walking to school, I would double over with stomach pains, not infrequently either, and that was about anxiety. I would have difficulty sleeping if I was worried about school the next day, and that went on for much of my life. So I know how unchecked anxiety can control someone's life. If our anxiety is in the driver's seat, it can keep us frozen. We all know how anxiety can have us ruminating about things we can't do anything about. We lose sleep, even over little things. We can become afraid, insecure, afraid to ask for what we really want. And if it gets worse, we don't even know what we really want. Our minds get cluttered with questions like all the what ifs. You know, what if I mess up? What if people don't like me? What if I make a fool of myself? Well, on today's show, we're going to be talking about strategies for weathering, weakening, and understanding our anxious thoughts with our guest and my friend Tamar Chansky. Tamar is a clinical psychologist, one of the nation's leading experts on anxiety. Her new book is called Freeing Yourself from Anxiety, 4 Simple Steps to Overcome Worry and Create the Life You Want. Tamar, welcome.
Thanks so much for having me.
And for those few of you who might have some experience with anxiety, give us a call. Our number is 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. I've told several of my friends and colleagues that today's show is going to be on anxiety, and all of them said, oh yeah, I want to hear that. So call us. We'd love to hear from you. So, Tamar, when we lived in caves and we heard something that sounded like a mastodon or smelled like it, we had anxiety and we did what we needed to do to protect ourselves, and that's how we survived. But these days, I see people reacting to a C on a report card like it's a mastodon. It's a catastrophe. And I like the way you said in your book, you said, we feel like we're falling on a cliff, off a cliff, when we're really stepping off a curb. So what's happening in our brains?
Right. It's not our fault. We're all experts in having this experience, Dan, and what I was trying to do with the book is help us to be experts in what to do about it. So the way that we're wired is that we are working with what one neuropsychologist called yesterday's parts. So we're wired with survival as the goal, which is very convenient when there were mastodons, or maybe even when you're about to cross the street and a car darts out of nowhere. But it's very inconvenient in most other situations when you're trying to, you know, suggest an idea at a meeting or meet someone on a date. That's when it really gets us in trouble to have all those what ifs going through our minds.
What's going on? What's creating it? It seems to me that we are getting more and more and more anxious over the years. Somebody asked me earlier today, did we have all this anxiety in the 50s and 60s? And I'm inclined to think not. There was anxiety culturally, but not like today.
Right. And there have been some studies that have shown that as well, that I think it was a study that came out around the year 2000 that showed that typical school children had the same level of anxiety as kids who were in a clinical setting 50 years earlier.
For treatment for anxiety.
Yes, yeah. So we've just kind of, we keep leveling up, in a sense, with what we think of as our baseline level of anxiety.
So you've established already that sometimes anxiety is a good thing, right? It keeps us alert to whether there's cars coming. And the image I use is, you know, if you wake up in the middle of the night and realize you haven't paid your health insurance, you know, you're late for that, then anxiety is a good thing. But what happens in the brain where, you know, I'm because I drive slowly, I'm a subject of road rage often. What's happening in their brains that because I drive so slow, it feels catastrophic to them?
Right. It feels like the scene, it, you know, falls away, the current moment, and we are back in the caveman days, and you're a threat. You're a threat to that person getting to their work or getting to their destination. And so before you even have a chance to think, wow, this reaction really doesn't make sense, the body's taken over. I think about the amygdala is the part of the brain that mobilizes the whole system to fight or flee. And so my tagline, my favorite tagline, is don't let your amygdala ruin your day.
What mediates the amygdala? What the amygdala says, this is a crisis. Then there's our prefrontal cortex that says, now wait a minute, you know, it's a car.
Exactly.
It's going slow. But that communication's not working so well.
It's a timing issue, really, that what comes first is that fight or flight reaction, because that's how we're built. That's probably, in a lot of ways, how we're able to be sitting here, Dan, having this conversation today. This is how we've survived this long. But sort of, I think of it as a department store, in a sense, that first floor is survival. Down here, the amygdala, sort of the lower brain, and we have to take the elevator up. Take some time. So it takes some time to get to the top where we can then think and analyze and really look and decide and choose all those higher level skills that have nothing to do with just, you know, fighting for your life.
When I feel great anxiety or someone is having a panic attack, there is no time to think. I just want this shut off. Give me a pill.
Millions and millions of people do have that solution. We all feel that way. That's for sure. But, you know, even with panic, if we relabel what's going on and think to ourselves, this is a panic attack, it's a false alarm, then within a few minutes, we will find that, you know, we're not fueling the fire of that panic, and the body will reset itself back to normal. That, you know, that's also wired in for us, that we can't just keep escalating with anxiety. That wouldn't be a good survival
mechanism.
Couldn't
survive it, yeah. Let's go to the phones. We've got Matt on the line. Hi, Matt.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
I wanted to call in and talk to you about this because it's something that's greatly impacted my life, and I'm actually someone who's studied in the area as well. And I actually remember the day that I figured out what it was, and it was a class. And it was a class on psychology. And in my medical school, I watched as everyone in the room, as they went over the different anxiety kind of disorders, raised their hand and said, that's me. That one is me. I'm not, you know, crazy, quote-unquote. That's me. I feel that way. And I have a problem in that I've gone to the point where I've reached a level that the medication that I can take, it's not something I want to do anymore, but I found that I don't have any effect from the typical kind of Lexapro type of Prozac type medication. However, the benzodiazepines are the only thing that really take away that really terrible feeling, but I don't want to be on them anymore. What's the next steps for folks that, and I've gone through cognitive behavioral therapy, and I find when I'm in that situation, I feel like I've kind of been there, done that, and I feel like I've reached a dead end. I don't know where else to go next.
Okay, hold on. Don't go off the line yet.
You got it.
Dr. Chansky?
So, Matt, my thought would be that I wonder what happened in that therapy if it kind of went far enough. That would be my initial thought. So we know that with panic, it's not enough to know that it's a panic attack, sort of talk yourself down from it, do your breathing. What you really need to do is to take the show on the road and put yourself in the situations where panic is likely to occur to see that you can survive it. And you may need to see that over and over again before you really believe it. So I would wonder if that had been a part of your treatment.
Well, thank you very much. I guess what I have is what I would describe as more generalized anxiety disorder. And even the folks that have dealt with me have said, listen, I've spoken to these folks and said, you pretty much understand that your life's not going to end on this. And just like you had described, you wake up in the middle of the night thinking about something that's clearly not that important in the grand scheme of things, but it takes away from my quality of life. And when I try to talk about it and reason it out, it's very easy to do that with other folks, and I've done it for different periods of time, and I wouldn't say that I've reached a, certainly can always use it, but I don't really have panic. It's just that I'm constantly anxious.
Let me try something on for size. You there?
Yes.
Okay. It's going to sound radical, and Tamar might disagree with me, but let's assume there's no hope. Let's assume you've gotten all the therapies you can get, you have all the understanding you can, that you don't want these damn drugs to snow you. Let's assume this is the best you can do. Okay, now what?
Yeah, I truly feel that I can deal with that. I guess what was raised to me recently by one of by my single prescriber, and I'm on a long-acting benzo, clonazepam. So I found that there's some folks that say the same thing. Like, now you're going to have to live with this. But then the person that actually deal with a PA, and then the physician that deals with this with me as a primary care is telling me that there's lots of research saying that there's neuronal degeneration with long-term benzo use. And I'm 100% honest with you, I really don't get any relief from anything else.
You're taking us in a different direction. I want you, and we're going to have to say goodbye to you. I want you to just try that on for size. You know, like the Jack Nicholson movie about OCD, As Good As It Gets. You know, just
so this is where it is. Yeah.
Try it on for size. Live without hope that you can get your hands on this, that you can change your brain. Let's assume that what this is Matt. And you're going to have to craft a life around this, like chronic pain, like arthritis in your mind.
Extremely reasonable suggestion, and I'll do my best. I appreciate the conversation. Yeah.
All right. Take care, Matt.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. I was surprised, Tamar, that you liked my idea. I thought you were going to throw something at me.
I did give you the thumbs up, Dan.
You did.
So yeah.
Why, for God's sakes?
One of the strategies, actually. I mean, you may be right if you meant that seriously, Dan. And I think that, you know, one of the things that we do when we come to a point of acceptance with a limitation is that we stop paying so much attention to it. And that really frees us up. So that's wonderful. But I also, one strategy that I really enjoy using with myself and with my patients is expanding the horribleness even greater than anxiety has told the story, expanding it so far that it just kind of contracts. And so I appreciate that idea in that light.
Yeah, and much of anxiety is about people who have anxiety about their anxiety, and, you know, this takes that away. Let's go back to the lines. We've got Nancy on the line. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, Dan. How are you?
Good. How about you?
Good. All of a sudden, I can't hear you. Are you there?
I'm here.
Oh, yeah. Okay, good. I'm calling about my father, who is suffering from severe anxiety and panic attacks. He's been in a caregiver role for the last year before my mother died a few weeks ago. And that's a role that he really has never played in his whole life. The stress of that really put him over the edge. And my sisters and I are casting about to get him the right help. So he's 82 years old. I'm wondering, is there hope? Can he get past this?
I have to say that Nancy and I are friends. I'm familiar with what's happening with her father. She and I have talked about it a great deal. And this guy is, from Nancy and her sister's description, so terribly agitated that he feels his mind is out of control, and it looks as though his mind is out of control. So it sounds like his anxiety so high is beyond talk therapy. Do you have any thoughts?
Well, so this might be a place, if this isn't already happening, where medication can be a useful tool to do what we're not able to do as powerfully quickly, which is to quickly transform what's happening in our bodies. That's what medication is able to do for us. And then we, from there, as life within us becomes more manageable and not our full-time job just living it, then we can work on other strategies to improve what's happening in our experience.
What do we do as our aging parent calls us in the middle of an anxiety attack? What do we do when our spouse has them or our child? What's our role there?
The way I see it is that we have two roles. Of course, we always have the role with loved ones to empathize and comfort them. But I think the other role with anxiety is to strategically point it out as the third party that's really the problem. When you feel like it's just you, there's no distance there. When you hear it from someone that worries really, you know, really attacking you, or worries really making you run today, it opens up some space to think it doesn't have to be that way. Worry's doing this, but maybe worry doesn't have to do that, or maybe other things could be happening here. So pointing to the worry as the problem, in a sense.
Nancy, I kind of dominated your phone call. I'm sorry.
No problem.
Did you have any specific questions of Tamar?
Well, I just wanted to say that we're casting about for the right solution. He has been on medications, but it's been sort of a patchwork. Each time he expresses a problem, he gets a different prescription from a different doctor. So you mentioned medications, and we have a sense that medication is the way to go now, but it's so hard to tell what exactly. I mean, are the medications helping? Are they hurting? You know, which ones are interacting with others in a negative way? And that part has been very, very frustrating.
Well, I happen to know that you're on the right track, that you found a psychiatrist who does work with older people, and that's a whole other topic that we could talk about if there's time tomorrow. The whole issue of anxiety in our elders as we age, I know it tends to increase. But we do have to take a break. Nancy, I appreciate your call. I hope it was helpful. Well, We've been talking with Tamar Chansky. Of course, we'll talk more with her in just a few minutes about anxiety. And if you want to call in about yours or want to get some advice, our number is 888-477-9499. But first, we have some business to take care of in Pledge Central. We're in day 8 of our winter pledge drive. And if you haven't yet shown your support for Voices in the Family, I'd really be grateful if you did so now during this program. For an update on how the campaign is going, I'm going to hand things off to Mike and Scott and Tanya English. Mike and Tanya, hi.
Hi, Dan.
Thank you. The number here is 1-888-345-9499. We have a wonderful group of volunteers. They are from the Transition Network. This is a national community of women over the age of 50 who work with others on issues of transition from one career to another, from full house to empty nest, and so on and so forth. So they are here to answer your calls. They've shown up in great numbers, and we're hoping, Tanya, that some folks will join them with a pledge of support at 1-888-345-9499. We have a goal of 25 people.
We're looking for 25 people to pick up the phone or go on the web, something. You know, as I was listening to this, I was thinking a lot of times for people, at least for me, I'll fess up here, the source of anxiety can be uncertainty. And you know what's true about WHYY is we are here. You know, whether you call in or not, we're going to be here. When you turn on the radio in the morning, when you're in your drive at 6 o'clock going home, we're here, really consistent. That makes a difference. But what that takes is people to call in, become members, support us in that consistency. Hope you'll do that. The number is 888-345-9499.
And these membership drives, this is a bit of anxiety provoking sometimes for us working here, because every time we go into one of these membership drives, we have to wonder, do people still care enough to support this service? Do people still feel that it is a big part of their lives? And will they step forward and make a financial commitment to WHYY and to our programming? So right now, there we go.
It works.
Yes, it works. So there's one person calling in at 1-888-345-9499. This is really useful information, as always on Voices in the Family, but anxiety is an issue that affects a lot of people, whether it is at a clinical level or at a, you know, it's part of my everyday life kind of level. Mm-hmm. So this is something a lot of people struggle with, and today we have information with Tamar Chansky coming into our studio, really practical advice on what can you do, what can you do about it, and what are some of the best practices. You make it possible with your membership pledge, 1-888-345-9499.
I think it was Dr. Dan that said something about crafting your life around whatever's going on. And I know I craft my life around the information that I get at WHYY. It helps me make journalism decisions. It helps me make political decisions. And we're out there gathering you the best sources, going to experts, and helping you make the everyday decisions that you need.
1-888-345-9499 or online at whyy.org. Really good point, Tanya. You know, we help people. There's such an onslaught of information. Everywhere you look, there's 500 stories coming your way from Twitter and Facebook and here,
yep,
and there and everywhere. So what do you do with all that information, and where do you take it? So WHYY is here for you to help you filter through some of this stuff. You make it possible when you become a member at 1-888-345-9499. I also want to thank the people at Meal Makers who've brought us some wonderful food today to sustain our volunteers from the Transition Network. And mostly I want to thank you for making that call at 1-888-345-9499.
That goal of 25 is ticking down. We're making some inroads with that, so thank you for that. But you need to go online at whyy.org or 888-345-9499. Help us with those numbers.
Yep, the numbers. They're always there on the tote board, and they can provoke a lot of anxiety in us, but you're there to help us. We know that you're out there and that you care. And Tanya, I really like that point you make, that, you know, there's so much uncertainty, and you need some things in your life that are stable and are there for you. And one thing that's good to know is, wow, I can turn on my radio anytime. There is WHYY. I know when the news is coming down the pike. I can listen to that. Within 5 minutes, I'll be updated on what's happening. Those are all such important services. And you, again, I can't stress it enough, you make it all happen. You make Dr. Dan happen at 1-888-345-9499, or when you pledge online at whyy.org. And thank you so much.
Thank you.
Penn Medicine supports WHYY. Doctors at Penn's Depression Research Unit have been studying the causes and treatment of mood disorders since 1964 and are currently performing research to develop improved treatments. Symptoms may include mood swings, low energy, and low motivation. Initial evaluations are offered to determine those who are eligible for treatment. More about Penn's Depression Research Unit at 215-662-3462. 215-662-3462.
And we're back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. To those of you who have pledged, I am really, really grateful. And for those of you who haven't, you can make me really, really grateful, too. We're talking about anxiety today with Tamar Chansky. Her most recent book is called Freeing Yourself from Anxiety, Four Simple Steps to Overcome Worry and Create the Life You Want. Tamar, we were eavesdropping on Mikan and Tanya English as they were pitching for us. And Tanya used the word uncertainty. And you really reacted to that. How come?
Because that's what we're all afraid of. That's what we all avoid. And there's a drawing in the book of a door that's partway open. And I think what we need to do is to be willing to look at what we are uncertain about, look at the uncertainty. We're going to have to live with some of it. But oftentimes when we're willing to look, we find that we know more than we think about what's going to happen.
What do you mean?
Well, in session and in my own head, often we start out with, I have no idea what I'm going to do. I have no idea how this is going to turn out. And it just becomes a mantra for us. And we don't look to see, well, maybe we have some idea about some parts of whatever it is that we're struggling with. What the antidote really to worry is our wisdom. Our wisdom comes from our experience living life. That's what's really happening. That's our story. The worry story is the catastrophes that could happen but likely won't. And so when we can approach that uncertainty with our wisdom, we see that there's more that we understand. We might see what blanks we need to fill in, what blanks we need to live with. But it's kind of a more complex picture than just we have no control.
I want to challenge you on that. And there's a quality of truth here. I'm remembering Erwin Yalom, the wonderful existential psychoanalyst from Berkeley. He's an incredible writer. But we had him on last year, the year before, on his most recent book about death. And it's called Staring at the Sun. So he says, facing your death is like staring at the sun. Mm. You know it, but you can't do it. You can't stare at the sun. One more example. I was driving when my van was almost broken down, and I was scared to death. And I said to the person I was with, who wasn't frightened, she was a young kid, and they don't get scared anyway. And I said to her, sometimes I feel as vulnerable as I am. And if I felt that all the time, I couldn't function. And I think so, too, with this big unknown tomorrow. The truth of our lives is we really have no idea what's going to happen. We can predict, we can estimate, we can guess, and we can hope. but we don't know. Uncertainty, I think, is the reality of our lives. And imagine the freedom we would have if we could tolerate uncertainty. Mm. I don't know if that's like staring at the sun. Mm. I don't know.
Right. Yeah, it's an active challenge, really, to be in that place. And I'm not going to challenge you, Dan, because I know that won't work. But I'm going to say that I think we go in and out of doing things, though, that are purposeful and that make sense. And so I think life is it's both, really. It's being in that place where we have no control, we don't know anything. That's true. And yet we also have things that we can purposefully do. And we just need sort of those two soundtracks or those two rhythms operating side by side.
You're talking about faith now. Faith that there's something inside, that we have resources inside that can help us navigate tomorrow, almost whatever it presents. It's really faith, which is, many would say, is the opposite of fear.
Mm-hmm. Right. And if I'm going to say, if people don't like that word, it's not exactly the same as wisdom, but there's something there. It's what you know when you're quiet.
Right.
We know the uncertainty when we're quiet, and we also know other things when we're quiet.
Yeah, I agree. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Adrian on the line. Hi, Adrian.
Hello. I would like, if there is any out there, some help in helping my 13-year-old child deal with performance anxiety when he's competing in individual sports. It's more so than team sports, I guess.
Tamar?
Sure. There are lots of different ways of approaching that, but I'll just I'll give you the quick explanation, Adrian, that I talk about with the children that I see and the adults as well. That if we look at successful athletes, for example, what they do is they're not thinking about their winning or losing, what place they're going to come in. They're really focusing on what they're doing. And so we can think of this as if your son, and I don't know if you mentioned what sport it is.
Tennis.
Is it tennis?
Yeah, that
really his goal needs to be about what he's working on in that game. What has his coach been helping him with, and really just trying to stay present with whatever it is that he is working on, and not about the outcome, because we can't control the outcome.
I've got a question kind of as a generalist and not as an anxiety specialist. Does your son like tennis?
He does. I mean, he absolutely loves it. However, he is devastated after every loss, and I try to encourage him as much as possible. And, sometimes it just doesn't work. You know, he tells me, oh, I want to kill myself. And, you know, obviously he's exaggerating, but to some extent that worries me, that he will at some point lose the joy of playing tennis.
Right. I think that's, that is a concern, the pressure that many of our young people feel about performance is everything, and they may lose the joy of what they're doing, or even more than that. They may become more depressed. To be resilient, if he really loves this game and he really wants to stay in this game, then what he has to work on is accepting the fact that every day people are losing. Excellent, excellent, excellent players are losing every day. That's part of his resilience, is understanding that, you know, he is still that strong player, even though the outcome at that specific match went a different way.
Adrian, I hope that was helpful. Tamar, would it be helpful if Adrian's son wrote down the reasons why he loves the game, just to have, to check in, to, because he doesn't love the game just because he wins sometimes.
That's true. And I think, you know, another thing to write down would be, what is his understanding of what it means to lose? What is he thinking about himself? That he's a terrible player every time he goes through that?
I've got one quick question. We've got to go to break in just a minute. When is it time to take an anxious child to get a consultation with a professional?
If they're suffering. So if they're, you know, not sleeping well, crying, not enjoying things, you know, not wanting to go to school or do their normal activities, you'll get that feeling in your gut or the back of your neck, that feeling that this is just not going away.
Mm. Thank you. We've been talking with Tamar Chansky. We're going to talk more with her after our break. We're talking about anxiety, and our number is 888-477-9499. Again, 888-477-9499. I mentioned that we are going to take a brief break for our winter pledge drive. We have an ambitious goal. It's a major drive, and we are hoping that you will show your support for this show and for this station and all the shows like it. I'm going to hand things off to Mike and Scott and Tanya English.
Hi, Dan.
Hey.
Hey, Dan, we're back.
Tanya, you saw that we followed up your comment?
Oh, I didn't hear. I stepped away, but it sounds good.
Well, listen to it. We're a podcast on iTunes if you want to listen to it.
Think about all the ways we're expanding. We're online. You can get us here live. You know, we give you lots of ways to catch up with you. So anyway, catch up with us, 888-345-9499. Let's talk about expansion a little bit. A lot of the people that are listening to us now are new members. You know, they've come in the last few months, have tested us out, and I think it's time now. Oops. That's a good sign.
There we go.
Another one. If we've proven ourselves to you, if you've listened for a while and felt like we're part of your life now, if you're tuning in every day, first of all, thank you. We're glad that you're with us. But help step up that membership and that commitment by becoming a member. 888-345-9499.
Or online, as these two people just did, Tanya, at whyy.org. This is a really just great show today. So much information for an issue that so many people struggle with and that affects the lives of so many people. 1-888-345-9499. We have a great group of volunteers from the Transition Network. This is a community of women 50 plus and forward, and they come together to talk about transition issues, whether it's from one career to the next, from, you know, career to retirement, those types of things. And that's just one example of how this community, how people in this region come together to work something out together. WHYY members do that every year during our membership campaigns when they step forward and they say, you know what, we like where WHYY takes us. We like to listen to the station, and that's why we come together, virtually speaking, at 1-888-345-9499. We come together to make this kind of programming possible.
It takes that first step, though, and it doesn't have to be a big step, but please do take the step. And, you know, if you've been a member for a long time, we might ask that you do a little bit more this time around. There are certainly some people who this year versus last year can't do what they could do last year, but if you're not in that situation, if you're feeling comfortable and you could do a little bit more, please step up your commitment. The number is 888-345-9499, or you can go online at whyy.org. We're expanding our services to meet the expansion in our audience. If you're seeing that we're doing a little more coverage of innovation, if we're in new neighborhoods that you haven't heard us tell stories from before, I hope you acknowledge that with a membership. 888-345-9499.
And in New Jersey, we're all over New Jersey now. We've, of course, always been in New Jersey, but we have a stronger presence there now. So you can hear WHYY all the way to the shore. That will, of course, come into play much more this summer when people will go back and forth more. But we're so happy to be there, and we're grateful to have been hearing from so many people who are listening in New Jersey and who are joining the fold as WHYY members. You can reach us when you call 1-888-345-9499, or you can join us online at whyy.org. We're just really happy to hear from so many people who are making a vote, really, Tanya, for Voices in the Family.
I have a little bit of an update. Last week, I brought my show and tell. My own bill had come in the mail, my own membership reminder. We never send you a bill, but you can consider Mike and I as your on-air radio reminder to call us, 888-345-9499. Don't put it aside. Do it now, 888-345-9499.
We just had a nice message from James in Narberth. He just says, keep it up. And by that, I presume he means the good work. That's how I'm interpreting this. So thank you so much for that pledge. You can be the next person at whyy.org. Thank you.
Independence Blue Cross supports WHYY. IBC is proud to launch the new Independence Blue Cross Foundation, whose mission is to transform healthcare in the communities they serve. The foundation's innovation grants support projects and research that significantly advance healthcare delivery in our region. Through community partnerships, the foundation will support new and creative solutions to reduce healthcare spending, improve quality, and expand access to care. To learn more, visit ibxfoundation.org.
We are back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We're talking with Tamar Chansky about anxiety. She's a local psychologist, one of the nation's leading experts on anxiety disorders. And her book is called Freeing Yourself from Anxiety, Four Simple Steps to Overcome Worry and Create the Life You Want. We're going to get to those four steps. Hey, listen, what's the difference between anxiety and an anxiety disorder?
So anxiety is what any of us have at any given time, any day, when we're worrying about something. And it comes and it goes. It's very much tied to whatever situation is that we're dealing with. But an anxiety disorder is when anxiety takes on a life of its own. So we wake up with it, we go to bed with it, it interferes with us getting our work done or enjoying our lives, and that's when we need to get help.
What are your four steps?
So the first one, Dan, is called relabeling. And what that means, if we head back to our earlier conversation about the survival brain versus what I'm going to call the suburban brain, which is what we need for parking spaces and board meetings, if we can recognize that the what ifs and all the warnings that we're hearing in our minds when we're faced with uncertainty are really the false alarm. They're coming from that busy amygdala that's not realizing that it's not a tiger, it's just, you know, a phone call. If we can relabel it as that, then we can take down the significance and the authority that it has in our minds, and we're able to then move forward and sort of look at what's really happening.
How do you relabel it in the middle of things when you're in the middle of it, or can you?
I think of it as a song, really, and I think of it as name that tune. You know, writing books about anxiety and talking about it all day, I still can have anxiety. No one is immune. But the more that you hear it and realize what it's really about, it's just harder to have that reaction to it, because you know how it's going to end. You know you're going to get it out of your way.
You're talking about being mindful of your own anxiety. Mm-hmm. So that raises the question about, does a practice of meditation, yoga, even acupuncture fit into this?
I think that the things that we do in our lives that help us to not just react automatically, but pause and see that we have choices about how to perceive something, what to do next, that all those practices help us in managing our anxiety, yes.
Yeah, and it gives us space around the anxiety where we can just observe it and get to know it. You know, it's like I did with, I talked about my childhood anxiety in the beginning of the show, and one manifestation was the boogeyman under my bed. You know, and I told a young client I saw, he said, "Do you still have that boogeyman under the bed?" And I said, "Yeah, he is, but I, after all these years, you know, he's an old guy, and, you know, I'm not scared of him anymore. You know, we're both old, and I can't get away from him, and he can't hurt me anymore." So it's, you know, it's perspective, it's context, and these practices help you. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Jim on the line. Hi, Jim.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
So, you know, it's almost funny because I'm starting to feel some stress myself, and I'm typically not a stressed person. I have a child who is undergoing some stress-related sleep problems. You know, we've had her treated by a professional before successfully, and successfully to the extent that it lasted about a year, and now she's sort of back having recurrent sort of issues going to sleep. We've tried to reconnect with this professional, and to no avail. We're just unable to sort of see her. So I'm wondering, how is the and my daughter wants to see this person and says to us almost on a daily basis, you know, did you make an appointment? Did you try to see the, you know, call the person and make an appointment? And I can't even get the person to call me back. And I don't know what to do. I don't know if I should just go to someone else or just, you know, open the phone book or... You know, so how do you handle that as a professional? Do you recommend that someone persevere and try to see somebody who they can't get an appointment with, or
no? I mean, if you're working that hard to get the appointment and they're not calling back, I wouldn't do it. You know, that doesn't paint a pretty picture. And no, I wouldn't recommend the phone book. I don't know where you live, but there's some universities around that have programs that specialize in children's anxiety disorders. There's a program out in Bala Cynwyd that specializes in anxiety disorders, and you know, and also University of Pennsylvania. There's a program that works with mood and anxiety disorders and does work with children. So I would recommend any of them. And the good news is you know your daughter responds to treatment. So
mm-hmm.
I would.
And so waiting for someone to just, you know, finally give you an appointment at some time off in the future is probably not worth it, right?
That's just what I said. If they're not returning calls, obviously they don't have time.
They don't have time.
Okay, so thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks for your call. You know, coming back to the issue of anxiety in children, I am really distressed, Tamar, about how many children suffer so much with stress and performance anxiety, and I wonder what can be done about that.
Yeah, so there are kind of two different parts to that, I think, that on the one hand, we as adults in our children's lives can do our job to be mindful of the kinds of pressures that we're putting on our children, talking about college when they're, you know, when they're in elementary school and all the pressures that they pick up from that. But I think also, Dan, because I work with children and adults, that there's so much that we can do to help kids to very quickly stamp that worry voice as something that, you know, maybe they're going to live with, like your boogeyman under the bed, but that they're going to have a different concept of the authority that that voice and that information has in their lives.
Do children do better than adults in treatment?
Children do faster. They really do. Children do take to this treatment because they often do the relabeling themselves. They'll come in and they'll say, "My brain is telling me this. It's really bothering me." Mm. Or, "My stomach is telling me this." So they've already separated themselves from the worry. So they've done, you know, a couple sessions of work right there. And so we can just, you know, forge ahead.
What's the next step?
So the next step after we quiet the noise is to see, was there something that got that noise started in the first place? It's about narrowing down the problem to the real issue at hand. Do we have to worry about everything, or is there just really one thing that we need to take care of?
It's almost like, again, you're being mindful. You're asking your patients at whatever age to be almost like research scientists when it comes to their anxiety, or investigative reporters of their own anxiety. So that assignment alone asks them to take a step back.
That's right. And it gets the thoughtful part of the brain working on the problem, and that's really the part that's going to be able to solve the problem.
You're going to have to tell us step 3 and 4 pretty quickly.
Very quickly. So once we have narrowed down the problem, we want to broaden our solutions to, you know, what we could do with it. So we may call, optimizing is the third step. We may call on different perspectives from trusted people. You're on my possibility panel, Dan, as I think I've told you before. But think about people who we trust and admire, and how would they weigh in on our situation? The fourth step is mobilizing, and that's really about breaking down the action that we need to take into the small steps that we won't be afraid to pursue.
Yeah, so get your distance, take a look at it, and then find out the wisdom in the anxiety. You know, the anxiety is informative sometimes, and it can guide our lives. Tamar, thanks so much. By the way, I think your book is terrific. And I think I've said so publicly already. So I highly recommend it. It's Freeing Yourself from Anxiety, 4 Simple Steps to Overcome Worry and Create the Life You Want. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks so much, Dan.
And speaking of what might be an anxious moment in lives, we're going to be talking next week about dating after 50. One-third of people over 50 are single and in the dating world. Should be a fascinating show. As I said earlier, we are in day 8 of our winter pledge drive. We're asking your support for this show, for all the programming here at WHYY. We know you love it. We know you depend on it. And we are oh so grateful to all of you for your commitment, for your support. Please, please keep it up. We're going to turn it over to Mike and Scott and Tanya English. Mike and Tanya, how are we doing over there?
We're doing good. You know, I wasn't listening completely, but one of the things that I do when I'm taking stall steps is I take time to celebrate the successes, and we are almost there. We have a few more to go. We need a couple more people to help us reach our 25-goal membership. The number is 888-345-9499. Help us celebrate a satisfied goal.
Yes, we had a goal of 25 people for this hour. We're almost there.
So
it's like a couple more moments till we really start celebrating. But Tanya, I'm with you. I'm happy that we've gone this far.
Mm-hmm.
23 people for the hour for Voices in the Family. Our goal is 25. I think that's great. That's so many of you, and we've gotten nice messages saying thanks, guys. Keep up the good work. Keep up the great work. Coming.